Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. For the next 1 hour to talk NFL, Giants, football, NFL draft, free agency, anything else you have on your mind in the land of the National Football League. 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number to reach us to talk Giants football. Or you can reach us on Twitter. We'll chat online via social media at hashtag GiantsChat. Big show coming your way today. We'll be joined by Matt Miller from Bleacher Report to talk about the NFL draft in just about a minute. He does a great job. He's in the midst of ranking the top 400 guys in the NFL right now, in the NFL draft right now, position by position. He has his big board mock draft. And Lance will try to get a feel now, less than 2 weeks away from the first night of the draft, where teams are starting to lean now in terms of what players are going
to
pick.
Plus, we'll start to hear more about potential trades as well. I think the last few days we've heard that there could be movement at the number two spot with respect to Tennessee. Adrian Peterson was just reinstated. Perhaps he's on the block. If somebody grabs him, would they have to part ways with a high first-round pick? I think a lot of those storylines are certainly going to impact perhaps who may fall to the Giants at number nine.
Well, and that's where I want to start with Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. He joins us now. Matt was kind enough to join us at the NFL Combine. He joins us again less than 14 days before the first night of the draft. Matt, it's coming fast and furious. We're into the final stretch run here, my friend. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm living on coffee right now, so I'm anxious. Like, I love the draft. It's my Christmas. You know, it's like my favorite time of year, but I'm also really looking forward to the little bit of a downturn after the fact.
Do you have your vacation planned yet?
Oh, yeah, I do, actually. So that's what everyone asks. They're like, are you ready for vacation? And I've already have a couple planned. I'm ready for it.
Wait, very so good. That means that, Matt, that following the 2015 draft, you don't already start ranking 2016 players? I thought there is no such thing as a vacation when it comes to that.
Here's the truth. I've finished my big board for 2015, so I have actually started my 2016 work.
There you go.
I'll have a mock draft out and a big board out the week after the draft, so it never stops. I'm on the same schedule as your guys' team scouts are. I'm already looking ahead to next year.
You're a sick, sick man. Let's get to it. Thursday night, less than 2 weeks away. I want to get right to it here, Matt, and I think your most recent mock draft was maybe a week ago, maybe a little sooner than that. You don't need to assign players to teams right now, but who do you think is going to be the top eight players off the board when the draft begins 13 days from today?
I love that question. I like that. I think Jameis Winston, obviously, Leonard Williams, Marcus Mariota, Dante Fowler, Kevin White, and Amari Cooper, Vic Beasley. And what? I need one more, right? And I'll say, oh, geez, one more.
This is where it gets tough. This is where it gets tough.
I think Alvin Dupree.
Oh, wow, you think Bud Dupree's rising that far and fast on NFL draft boards, huh?
Yeah, I like Dupree, and he has so much potential. But I think with Randy Gregory's failed drug test and the worry that there's more of that in his background, and Shane Ray's being a smaller guy and didn't have a great combine or pro day, I think those two things could push them down, and Bud Dupree could rise up.
One thing I'm hearing about Shane Ray, which I think is interesting, the more people watch him, you know, he had the great numbers, he had the great sack numbers, can get after the quarterback. I've heard the phrase one-trick pony come up a lot with him, where if he doesn't beat you with speed, he doesn't have those secondary and, you know, tertiary moves to beat the offensive tackle once he starts getting after the quarterback.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's tough when scouting that you focus so much on what a guy does. You know, like you said, the speed is great, anticipation off the snap, that first step quickness. But you do ultimately get into, will this work in the NFL? And that's for pass rushers, quarterbacks, everyone. And so it is important for guys to learn how to use their hands, how to find that secondary move, because when you're going against someone like Tyron Smith of the Dallas Cowboys, who is quick and able to cut off that edge, what are you going to do? How do you counter him? So it is. It's easy to fall in love with that initial thing a player does well, but for pass rushers, they have to have a plan, as people say. They have to know what they're going to do if the outside speed move doesn't work. And right now, he really doesn't have that counter move.
Talking with Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. Matt, you just listed 8 players who you think are going to be off the board before the Giants then selected number 9. Obviously, it's a game of speculation. The Giants usually have the philosophy, best player available. But, you know, if you were to hone in on perhaps one or two guys in particular, or at least value at the number 9 spot, who would you pinpoint that would be an excellent fit for the Giants?
Well, I really like Brandon Scherff, the offensive lineman from Iowa, played left tackle for them. I think he's probably a left guard in the NFL, a mauler in the run game, super physical, very good athlete. I think when we look at his 2004 tape, he played the week he had a scope on his knee, so it wasn't his best year. 2013, he was dominant, and he could maybe play tackle in a pinch, but he kind of fits that mold of versatile offensive lineman. I still think that a big outside receiver like Devontae Parker could be a need. We know that Jerry Reese has that philosophy of getting the playmaker if he's available. And Devontae Parker would be a playmaker. Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham Jr., great receivers, but not great size. And I think Reuben Randall is still trying to find his place. So if you could get someone like Devontae Parker, who is such a threat in the end zone with his size and his leaping ability, he would really round out that offense very, very well.
I want to touch on a couple guys that would be on the board in your scenario, Matt, on the defensive side of the ball. One player I've seen some Giant fans get excited about is Danny Shelton. They think he'll be a very good complement to Jonathan Hankins, a defensive tackle for the Giants, the big nose tackle. Another guy is Trey Waynes, the top-rated corner out of Michigan State, who really, to me, doesn't have a whole lot of holes in his game, if any. And then you mentioned the two pass rushers that you don't see going off the board in the top 8, Ray and, of course, Randy Gregory. What do you think of those four? Are they in the neighborhood for the Giants there, or do you think they're in that next tier of players down?
No, I think they're all in the neighborhood. And I would throw Marcus Peters, the corner from Washington, in there. I have him rated as the top corner in the draft.
Wow.
There are the off-field issues. He was dismissed from Washington midseason. But I've actually had the opportunity to talk to him and his coaches, both staffs, this year's staff and the staff that was there before with Steve Sarkisian. And the players he played with love him. Danny Shelton loves him, really gave a lot of good insight into what type of teammate he is. So I like Marcus Peters there. Randy Gregory is another one. If you're comfortable with the off-field issues, you could get a Pro Bowl or All-Pro caliber player, and he's a very, very good football player. You just have to know what you're getting in terms of the off-field personality. Danny Shelton would actually be a surprise to me because it kind of goes away from how the Giants have valued the defensive line in the past. Getting a true nose tackle, a guy who's really only capable, I think, of playing the zero and the one technique, even though he plays them really well, that seems more like a luxury pick at 9 overall instead of a good value for them. So that would be a surprise for me. And then Shane Ray is a smaller guy than what they've targeted in the past at defensive end. And I really like Robert Ayers and Jason Pierre-Paul as the starters. You have DeMontre Moore, who was a third-round pick a few years ago. So that wouldn't be as much as a surprise, but it would definitely be one of those, hey, this is the best player on our board, and we're just going for value type picks.
You mentioned Brandon Scherff, and a lot of Giant fans seem to have the idea, and I'm not quite sure why. I've tried to dispel this notion that that's a need pick at number 9, and it's not a value pick. How do you rate Scherff on your big board in terms of overall talent in this draft class this year?
Well, I'm crazy, probably. I have him at number 7 overall, so I really like his ability. And, to explain that further, he's in a group with Todd Gurley, Randy Gregory, and Devontae Parker. They all have the same grade. So you could say he's anywhere from 7 to 10 on my board. But he is, I think he would be a value pick, like you said. I don't know that that's a huge need pick with Jeff Schwartz coming back healthy, with the idea that Wester Rickberg's going to take that next step and become a stud at center, like I thought he could have been coming out of college. And you have, Justin Pugh at right tackle, Will Beatty at left tackle, obviously. So I'm not sure that Scherff is a need pick, especially if guard is one of those areas where the team decides they have to add a player this year. The depth at guard is pretty good. You could look at round 3 and get a player who, maybe is never going to be as good as Scherff, but a guy like Laken Tomlinson from Duke could be a really good player. And in round 3, you're able to knock off a couple other positions before you go that route.
In terms of the ideal position for Sheriff moving forward, do you see him, though, potentially as a guy that could play left tackle or at least right tackle? Because, you know, there's a debate as to his translation from the collegiate level to the NFL level, like a Zach Martin, for example, Matt, who was a tackle at Notre Dame. Cowboys needed to find the spot for him. They put him at guard. What about Sheriff becoming a tackle at a, perhaps a Pro Bowl level even in the NFL?
I think he can play tackle. I'm one of the few people out there who I've talked to that actually thinks he could survive a tackle and be very good. I think the difference is being a very good left tackle or an all-pro left guard. So it's maybe a higher projection for him at guard, but he could be a very good tackle. I mentioned it earlier. I think his 2014 tape, I think, is skewed because of the knee injury. I don't think he was ever completely healthy, even though he was playing. And so he started to, overset a little bit. And you saw him struggle with speed rushers to the outside. And that's because of that need to put weight on the knee to balance on the edge. But I think he could do it. He's freakishly strong, quick, and upside. I mean, this is a guy who, has a tennis background, tight end background. He's still a little bit raw in terms of what type of player he could be long term.
We're joined by Matt Miller, covers the draft for Bleacher Report. Matt, I want to shift gears here now. We talked about where the Giants picking at 9 in round number 1. Let's shift to where you think might be a good value selection in round 2. A lot of Giant fans are very concerned about the safety position right now. I'm not sure what you think about Landon Collins. I'd love to hear it. Where do you think he might go? And when the Giants get there in the second round, do you think that there's a safety with enough value that could be a Giant selection in the second round? And if not, where do you think there might be over the course of the draft?
When I first started looking at the safety class, I really didn't like it. And I was kind of all in on Landon Collins and not really on anyone else. The more time I had throughout the process, I started to come down on Landon Collins a little bit to where I think he's probably a late first-round pick. So the Giants are picking there at 40. It's not completely out of the question that he would be there. It is a bit of a stretch, maybe a bit of a hope and dream, but it is possible. And now I think, let's say Landon Collins is off the board and safety is the route they want to go in round 2. There are some very good safeties who could be available. I think that starts with Demarius Randall, the free safety from Arizona State. Very, very productive guy, could play single high free safety, could play in a double safety set, could play in the nickel. He is an exciting player. I think Jaquiski Tartt, the strong safety from Stanford, he is one of the best hitters in this year's class. 6'1", 221 pounds. He can play single high safety. He can play down in the box. He can play, if you want to go three safety look, he can help you there. And then Jerod Holloman from Louisville led the nation with 14 interceptions this year, came out as a redshirt sophomore. Not a great tackler, but elite in coverage and kind of has some of those Devin McCourty qualities where his instincts and his ability to just float to the ball as a free safety playing center field are pretty legendary. And the 14 interceptions, those weren't gimmies. They weren't things where, the quarterback just blew the ball to him. If you watch against Florida State, he read Jameis Winston and picked him off twice. So he's a pretty impressive player. He'd definitely be there for you guys at pick number 40.
Matt, you threw out Demarius Randall from Arizona State. He's appealing, as you mentioned, because he's a free safety. And if you look at the Giants roster right now, they have strong safeties. They don't necessarily have a free safety. You recently wrote an article where you put 5 players you thought were on the rise. Randall's on that list. What in particular, I know you talked about some of his assets, but why in recent weeks has all of a sudden his stock started to increase?
Well, I think teams are starting to look at the safety class and realize that there are some holes, that it's not a great class overall. And so when you go back and recheck Demarius Randall, you're going to see a player who's very aggressive. He has the ability to flip the field and create turnovers, and he's versatile. So he can play free safety, strong safety, or as that nickel corner. And, I compared him to Tyrann Mathieu in terms of playing style. I know some people have said Jimmy Ward. Others have said, kind of a like Earl Thomas's little brother. So I think he also fits that mold of what's trendy in the NFL right now. Fast, aggressive free safety who can tackle, who's going to give you production there, and then is also, capable of creating turnovers and being such an asset there. So I think Randall has, he's a three-tool player, and he checks all those boxes that teams want right now. So it's kind of a perfect storm for him.
We're joined by Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. He does a great job covering the draft. Matt, it seems like though the number of traditional 4-3 linebackers that play inside, you know, is not real high in this draft, there seems to be a sweet spot for the guys that are going to come out to get picked in that second to third round area. Is that where you see the Kendricks, the Perrymans, the McKinneys, the Alexanders, the Dawsons? Is that the range that you see those guys going on day two of the draft?
It is. And if they could go high, I think Eric Kendricks and Paul Dawson could go early second round. And, you know, the same for Denzel Perryman. He could go early as well. Bernardrick McKinney. I think you could even throw Stephon Anthony from Clemson in there as a possibility. But I talked to one team, not the Giants, team on the West Coast. They don't have a linebacker, an inside linebacker, rated in their top two rounds, which is different from myself. I have five of them in the second round. So I think there's a wide range of opinion on how good the inside linebackers are in this class because the top guys are all small. You know, Paul Dawson, 6 foot, 235 pounds. And he ran a 4.9 at the combine. So they're all small. There's no elite athlete in this year's class at that position. So I do think it's possible that they get pushed down and players, you know, at like safety and receiver and offensive tackle start to move up on draft day.
Matt, earlier you mentioned the eight players who you think are going to be off the board before the Giants selected nine. There's a lot of trade speculation out there with respect to the Titans at number two, where Marcus Mariota may go. If you had to select one team right now in the top eight that you think would likely move out and make a trade, who would that be?
I think the Titans. I do think they want to get out of that pick, and I've heard the Browns are very interested in Marcus Mariota. They're just afraid of what it will cost to get up there. There's the San Diego Chargers rumor. I think you have to look at a team like New Orleans with two picks. Would they be willing to try to get a blue chip player instead of two potential starters? So they're definitely a team to look at. But I can see Tennessee trading out. I see the Oakland Raiders trading out at pick number four. And then I think you look at the New York Jets at pick number six. They're definitely a team that they could try to add more talent and get, you know, a lot of extra picks instead of just going for that one guy.
Now, with that being said, you threw out three different teams. Would that impact any of the players being taken if you see some movement in the first eight selections, or is it just a matter of teams switching spots yet the same players going off the board?
Probably more just teams switching spots. You know, I think the ideal scenario for Giants fans is that Marcus Mariota goes in the first eight picks, and maybe someone trades up for him or whatever, but you want him off the board because that means – a better receiver or a better edge rusher or a better offensive lineman or corner, a better player is going to get pushed down to you guys at pick number nine. So the hope, I think, for Giants fans, you're going to want to see some trades in the first round to get guys up there. But there are, you know, probably 10 or 11 top-tier players in this draft. So where you guys are at nine is a good spot. There's going to be a player worthy of that pick that's going to be there, I think, when it all comes down to it.
Joined by Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. And, Matt, you mentioned the possibility of Devontae Parker being a target for the Giants at number nine. I want to drop down a little bit here. Though this wide receiver class, you know, maybe not as talented as last year, just might have been the best wide receiver draft class in the history of the NFL. What receivers, if you're picking around two, three, even four, that stick out to you that say, wow, this guy would be a great person to target. He could be a great value for you in those middle rounds.
Yeah, I think Nelson Agholor from USC is going to shock people with how good of a pro he is, and he might be a late first, early second-round player. Philip Dorsett from the University of Miami. I talked earlier about how the Giants' receivers are kind of small and fast, and that's Philip Dorsett. You know, he's 5'10", but he is a burner, averaged around 25 yards per touch at Miami, and they didn't have a great offense there. So he was really a one-man show at times. If you look at the bigger receivers, Devin Funchess from Michigan, who played some tight end, played some receiver, definitely would give you guys some size. Devin Smith from Ohio State, who was just, you know, on fire to end of the season for them. Once Cardale Jones started airing the ball out, he really, really showed up. So he's a very good deep ball receiver, someone who can stretch the field. And then I think when you get down to like round three, there is a bit of a drop-off at the receiver position, but you start to look at Rashad Green from Florida State, who's a great route runner. Sammy Coates from Auburn, who's a big guy with deep speed. Or Trey McBride from William & Mary, who is a small school guy but very well-rounded. And I really like Tyler Lockett from Kansas State as a slot receiver who, not great size, but he's going to beat you down the field.
This might be a strange question, Matt, but I think you'll understand why I'm asking it after I do. Why is Breshad Perryman not Darius Hayward Bay?
That's a great question. I want to know the answer to that myself. or Stephen Hill, even.
Yep.
I'm not a Breshad Perryman fan as a player. I've never met the kid. I hope he's a great human being. I loved watching his dad play when I was a kid, but I'm very scared of him as a prospect. Of the receivers that I've looked at this year, and I think there were like 55 of them, he dropped a higher ratio of passes than any receiver that I looked at.
Wow.
And that terrifies me, because what is a receiver if he can't catch and if he can't run crisp routes? Perryman ran two routes at Central Florida, a slant route and a go route. So, yes, he's big, 6'2", 212. Yes, he runs a 4.26 40 at his pro day. But I think right now he's a lot more hype than substance. And I know Mel Kiper has him as a top 10 pick. I respect the heck out of Mel Kiper. I wouldn't have a job if he didn't exist, but I disagree with him pretty strongly on that one. I think Perryman is closer to a mid-second-round type player.
Matt, earlier John had mentioned last year's wide receiver class, so much depth, so much production across the board. You know, you talked earlier about the safety spot, may not be much depth there. What position is there an immense amount of depth this season where, you know what, you could get a steal perhaps when you get into that fourth, fifth round range, and you could get a potential, not necessarily a starter, but at least a guy off the bench that you know could produce in year one?
The running back class this year is amazing. I think that you hit on it. There are guys in rounds four or five who could be starters. David Johnson from Northern Iowa, or Carlos Williams from Florida State, Mike Davis from South Carolina. There are a lot of very good running backs in this year's class. I want to say that I gave 11 running backs a grade of this guy could be a starter at some point.
Wow.
And then there was like one or two more guys that were like, okay, he might not ever be a number one running back, but he's going to see a lot of touches as a receiver, a runner, a returner. So it's a great running back class. If the Giants decide, hey, we want to pick up another guy in the mid rounds like we did Andre Williams last year, this would be the year to do it.
All right, final question for me. We're joined by Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. Matt, we talked about the potential of Brandon Scherff being there for the Giants at 9. Let's say theoretically, and I think this is well within the realm of possibility, he's off the board when the Giants get there at number 9, and they decide to address their offensive line concerns a little bit later in the draft. Who do you think of that second group of offensive linemen, the Andrus Peets, the T.J. Clemens, the Eric Flowers, who everyone seems to be falling in love with the more they see him and his potential, the Lael Collins, the D.J. Humphreys, or even maybe you know the group below that? Who could be a target for the Giants in round 2 at 40 or even round 3 that you think could step in and be a contributor right away, whether it's a guard or a tackle?
Well, I think Eric Flowers, that's where he should be drafted. I know, like you said, people are falling in love with him, but He needs some work, but I think he could come in and play right away, especially at right tackle. If it's a perfect world, that's where he plays right away. I like, as a third-round player, I really like Ali Margaret from Hobart. Maybe he's a guard, maybe he's a tackle. He's kind of in that, you know, Zach Martin, Brandon Scherff, Joel Batonio world of he's versatile, can play a couple different spots. Ty Cambrelo from Colorado State could come in and play right tackle or guard right away. And he's a guy in that probably third-round range who I really like. He doesn't get a ton of hype because he's not a great athlete, but he's a finisher. He's kind of a mean, nasty player and not someone I would want to bet against having a really long career.
Matt, before we let you go, John just mentioned a number of offensive linemen that could very well go right after Scherff. With your analyzation, how much of a drop-off, in your opinion, is there from Scherff to, let's say, the next first rounder when it comes to offensive linemen? Is it a huge one, or, I mean, are we talking about a very small type of sample size here?
I think that it's a decent drop-off. It's not huge. It's not like, you know, the gap between Marcus Mariota and Bryce Petty or anything. But I have Scherff at number 7 overall, and then I have, like, D.J. Humphreys and Lael Collins and Andrus Peets. They're right in that, like, 20 to 25 range. So there is a bit of a drop-off. But it's not so big that, you know, let's say they wanted to trade down to, you know, pick 15 for whatever reason. There should still be a good offensive lineman who could have a day one impact on the board.
Matt, we appreciate the time. We want to catch up again either right after the draft, as long as it's before you go on your vacation and you shut the brain down until you get to 2016, all right? We appreciate the time.
Thanks, Matt.
You You bet, guys. Thank you.
That's Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. Very kind to give us a lot of time here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Does a tremendous job. Great information, great stuff. And again, we'll try to catch up with Matt a little bit later on. Maybe it's after the draft. We can go over who the Giants picked and get his opinion on who the Giants decide to go with in the 2015 NFL draft. And, you know, the top 10 lands of the big board seem to slowly becoming more in sync. And I think the interesting thing is, those type of pass rushers, like the Rays and Gregories, I tend to see them dropping a little bit as we've gone along here. While maybe a month ago, all those guys were top five, top six, maybe even seven or eight picks.
Well, I think some of it has to do with the off-the-field stuff.
Well,
so you have to at least take that in consideration with respect to Gregory. The other thing to keep close tabs on over the next few days, remember, John, they have the what I like to call the re-medical checkup period over the next few days, where guys go back to Indy, Todd Gurley, you know, players who didn't necessarily get
Kevin
to go
Coleman.
Through everything.
Yep.
Correct. That's going to also impact draft stock, yep, too, depending on if we hear somebody's not at the level in their rehab process where they should have been.
And obviously injuries play a huge role. Giant fans know that from last year. 201-939-4513. Your phone calls the rest of the way. Hashtag Giants chat. Excuse me. It's draft talk all the time on Big Blue Kickoff. It might as well be hashtag Giants draft the way we talk, the way the show
might
goes.
Might as well adjust it based on the period of time.
Let's go to Bernie in New York. He's been patiently holding. Bernie, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us, bud.
Yeah, thanks. I have some questions about the offensive line, particularly about left tackle.
Sure.
Every time we talk about the offensive line and left tackle, everybody seems to be very high on Will Beatty, and he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. In my mind, I think he's an underperformer. I think if you can do it, I don't know if you can, check the stats on him in terms of the number of holding penalties that he has and also the number of sacks he gives up. I'll bet you it's one of the highest numbers in the league.
Well,
for,
Bernie, I will say this.
Tackles.
Bernie, I will say this. You are not alone. I had to fight off a lot of Giant fans that called up earlier in the year and complained about Will Beatty, and they want to move on from him. But I will say this. If you go by his performance in 2013, I think a lot of what you said is right. Will Beatty had a very, very rough year in 2013. But if you look at his performance last year, and again, I'm going to bring up the analysis of Pro Football Focus here, and I'll just give you a decent feel for what they thought about Will Beatty last year. Last year, Pro Football Focus had Will Beatty ranked as the 14th best left tackle in the league last year. So that's the top half of the league. A plus 13 grade overall, and they had him actually last year as a even run-pass blocker. So last year, Will Beatty played well, if you want to go by Pro Football Focus. I thought he had a bounce-back year. And the bottom line is, Bernie, and we'll let you finish with the rest of your points, obviously, he signed to a long-term contract worth a lot of money. So he's not going anywhere, at least for this season. Maybe you can figure something out moving forward, but right now, he's your starting left tackle.
Right. You know, when you say he's 14th, been rated 14th in the league, that's mediocre at best. And, you know, and one of the problems that I think this whole league suffers from is, gee, we invested a lot of money in a guy. Even if he stinks, we got to play him. That's ridiculous. You know, you invested the money in the guy, the money is gone. Get somebody who can play.
No, but Bernie, it's not gone because it's still on the salary cap. So even if they let him go, you're still paying him. So you have to then take extra funds to pay his replacement. And by the way, just for the record, one of the top tackles on the free agent market this year was Brian Bulaga out of Green Bay. He had a rating below Will Beatty's this year. Trent Williams, the big left tackle for the Redskins, a rating below Will Beatty's this past year. Doug Free, who re-signed with the Dallas Cowboys, below Will Beatty this past year. So, you know, the guy you're going to get to replace him isn't necessarily going to be better, and you're still paying Beatty in addition to that.
I get your point.
No problem, Bernie.
Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
Not Bernie. No problem.
All right, Bernie.
Appreciate the call, man. Again, I'm not trying to, you know, say you're wrong. If you want to move on from Obidi, that's fine. Just understand you're going to pay a price for that, literally.
Money doesn't disappear.
No, it doesn't.
Even though guaranteed contracts are not very popular in the NFL compared to other sports, you still need to absorb the money. you don't just all of a sudden cut the guy and then the books are clean. So I think you need to look at things from a financial perspective whenever you're determining where you want to go with respect to your roster. And, you know, the last caller, John, brought up the fact that, you know, is there anybody else on the roster that perhaps can push Beattie? It's not as if the Giants haven't brought in other players over the last few years to foster competition, but if Beattie's winning out, you know, that means he's winning the battle in training camp. Other players have had ample opportunities, especially during the time period where Beattie's been hurt as well. Beattie, at the end of the day, is the guy that has proven he's the most consistent option at left tackle.
And again, tackles don't come cheap, folks. Do you know how you get great left tackles? You draft them extremely high or you pay them a lot of money. That's the two ways you get them. They do not grow on trees. And if you listen to Matt Miller, a guy like Eric Flowers, who is very raw, has a lot of work to still do, people are talking about him being a top 10, top 15 pick, even though he's going to take a lot of work off the bat, and maybe a few years down the road he'll be a great left tackle, but it's going to take some work and some development, and you're using a premium blue-chip pick on a guy like that.
That's what I'm saying. You got to question finances. You have to question resources. You know, there's so much that goes into play when you determine what direction you want to go in the draft and what direction you want to go in free agency. You know, John, you just alluded to the fact that left tackles on the market are very costly. Look at Brandon Albert last year. I'm going back to last year's free agent period. Forget this past season. You know, what he got in terms of the Miami Dolphins. Yes, he got hurt, but at the same time, you know, it was very costly what they had to pay for. And granted, Miami needed help on the offensive line, but even though you need help, it's not as if it's going to come cheap.
Jeremy Parnell started, what, three or four games for the Dallas Cowboys over his three-year career there?
Mostly this past season.
He got a four-year, $30 million contract. Yeah. Or was it $26 million, something like that?
I think it was more in that range.
It was, I mean, it was obscene. And this guy's never played before, and you're paying him that type of money. I know people, you know, cringed and was like, oh, I can't believe he gave Will Beattie that contract. Folks, for the type of money other guys are getting, Will Beattie's not being overpaid. I hate to tell you, it's a market. It's according to the market, it's a good contract. It just is. You might not like the market. It's too bad. That's the market. You go out there, you don't want to pay the price to buy a new car, but guess what? If you want to buy a new car, that's how much it's going to cost. You can bargain and bargain all you want. They're not going to take a loss on the car. So it's just the way it is.
He actually got a five-year deal, $32 million.
I told you something like
from
that.
From the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's where Parnell went.
I mean, that's around what Beattie got.
And Beattie had much more starting experience.
Much more.
Not even in the same ballpark.
And he succeeded in that. And he's a right tackle. Beattie's a left tackle.
Left tackle, yeah. So
all the people that complain about Will Beattie's contract, Jeremy Parnell, 5 years, $32 million. Which guy would you rather have? And if you say Jeremy Parnell, I'm going to have to send the Tino over to your house to give you a psychiatric exam. You guys can compare legal pad notes.
Though that person may want to give him a psychiatric test as well. I think they could help each other out.
Well, the whole key is that we're going to be viewing the interaction, and then we can judge the psychosis of both of them.
Hey, I'm all for that. I just want to make sure that Paul's getting tested as well. That's all.
Well, that's
the goal of the situation.
We all hope Paul eventually gets tested and we figures out what his problems are. Let's go to Jason in D.C. next. Jason, what's going on?
Hey, John and Lance, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Jason.
Doing well,
how are you?
Pretty good. First of all, I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan of the show. I think you guys are awesome.
Thank you, Pat. We appreciate you listening. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I just had two quick questions for both sides of the ball. With the ninth pick in regards to Sheriff, I was wondering, because the thing that I keep reading is that you don't want to draft a guard that high as opposed to a tackle. It seems to be a lot more important on a tackle, which I understand. I'm just wondering, why is a guard not really, looked at as that important as somebody that you could take with the ninth pick?
Real quick, and we'll let you finish. I don't think it's that a guard is less important. I think the skill set you need to find a guard to be effective is probably maybe a little easier to find. And on the open market, for example, in free agency, guards generally get far less money than tackles. So for that reason, it's valued a little bit less. You know, there aren't a ton of guys that are, 6'7", 325 with great feet to shift around to play left tackle. But you can find more guys that don't have to have as great a feet or 330 or 6'2 or 6'3 and can bang at guard. So I think those players are maybe a little bit easier to find. And that's why people say, then I don't want to waste, and I put that in quotations now, the ninth pick overall in the draft on a guard.
But at the same time, Jason, and we'll let you continue, there's a lot of versatility showcased in the NFL today with respect to offensive linemen, and that's why when people say, you know, Brandon Scherff, using him as an example, he's going to be a guard in the NFL, but let's not forget he has all this tackle experience coming out of college as well.
And I honestly believe he can play right tackle. Might he be a better guard down the road, Jason? Maybe. But I think he could play right tackle and give you a Kareem McKenzie-like presence out there. I honestly believe that.
Okay. All right. Excellent. That definitely clears it up for me. My second question, I was just wondering how you feel about Devon Kennard? Because in my opinion, I feel like he could be a Pro Bowl player, honestly. And I'm just wondering what you guys think and how high you think his ceiling might be. And that's it, guys. I appreciate you guys taking the call.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate you calling in and listening.
Thanks so much. When it comes to Devon Kennard, I'm excited, and I mentioned this earlier in the offseason, John, when you look at the new defense under Spags, who's the one player that I think he can get the most out of, where there's a great deal of upside, I look at Kennard because I think he's a player that they'll utilize in the pass rush. He's versatile where he can play multiple linebacker positions. I think his ceiling is extremely high, and I only think that they basically just tapped into it. I mean, he's barely been a New York Giant. The fact that he got 4.5 sacks over the last 5 games last season just goes to show you, and regardless of how much stock or substance you want to put in that resume, he's an active player, and he adapts to the system, and he's got a great deal of versatility.
And he's smart.
Correct. So when you throw all those characteristics together, John, and you now throw in Spags and how he utilizes players and the upside of the system as a whole, that is the one player that I really would keep close tabs on entering this season.
The only thing, literally, folks, the only thing, well, maybe two, now to worry about with Devon Kennard. One, his athletic ability to cover. I'm not sure if you want him being your cover linebacker. He hasn't shown it that he can do it in the past. He talked to me at the end of the year, told me that's the one place he wants to improve. Let's see if he can do that going forward. That's the one thing I'll keep an eye on. The second thing I'm worried about is injuries, because he did have injury issues at USC when he was there. He had some injury issues last year at the hamstring to start the season. Then he missed the last couple games of the year. I believe it was the knee, right? Or was it the ankle?
I have to clarify that. But he was on the field for the last 5 games.
He was.
Despite being somewhat banged up.
And again, and it wasn't anything serious. He didn't have surgery or anything like that. But he has had injury issues in the past. So keep an eye on that. That's an issue for all players, though. Remember that. So those are the only things I'd worry about with Devon Kennard. I think he can be the starting strong side linebacker here in that Carl Banks-type mold for a very long time, if he stays healthy.
Toe injury. Yeah.
I knew it was something on the leg. And he did miss the final game of the year.
Correct. Yes. So it was, when I say 4.5 sacks, it was his last 5
right,
games.
Exactly.
Not necessarily
yeah.
the last 5 games of the season.
Yeah, but again, this is not anything super serious. If the Giants are playing for a playoff spot in that game, my guess is that Devon Kennard is probably going to play. So just something to keep in mind going forward. 201-939-4513. Mo in New Jersey. Mo, what's up?
Hi, what's up, guys? How you doing?
What's going on, Mo?
Doing well, Mo.
Good, good. I just want to say real quick, love the show. I literally study all day. This is like the 1 hour I get. I look forward to every day.
I appreciate that, Mo. Thanks for making time for us.
Law school or doctor, Mo? Which one is it?
I'm sorry?
Law school or are you trying to be a doctor? Which one?
A pharmacist, so a doctor and
yep,
a pharmacist.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. So I wanted to make a quick point. I think it's interesting to talk about because the Giants have so many different areas to see that they could draft. But the one thing I kind of want to branch off is I really don't like how people say it's such a reach to grab Brandon Scherff there at 9. One, there's several people who do think he can play at tackle. You just had Matt Miller on recently, and, Dan Cater, Mel Kiper. They all think he can play tackle. And then I think people gloss over that, you know, he's projected, or not projected, but people think he can be an all-pro guard, and that's a pretty big deal. And if you look back, like, in 3-4 years, would you really be upset that you got one of the best guards in the league to staple an offensive line that, you know, could not run the ball last year?
Mo, you're preaching to the choir. I think what you said is 100% right. I agree with everything you said, and I get where other people are coming from in terms of trying to get one of those, you know, premium position guys. But if you're telling me this guy's going to be an all-pro caliber player, I don't care if he's an all-pro caliber guard. He's going to help your team win football games, and he's going to help reestablish that winning the line of scrimmage philosophy the Giants have tried to live by for as long as the franchise has been around and has gotten away from them a little bit the last few years, and I think that would be huge.
The goal is, Mo, at the end of the day, you want the 5 best players on the offensive line out of your team. And if that means that you have some versatility where you can move guys around, more power to you as a franchise.
Yeah, and, I definitely think we definitely need to address the defense as well. You know, get way too many plays we're going to have a liability on safety, a safety position probably. So we really want to make sure we can, you know, strong up our front seven. And if our corners stay healthy, we should be okay. But, you know, a lot of, like, the pass rushes there, I just don't fit the Giants scheme because, you know, I think they're more 3-4 outside linebackers. The one guy, if he potentially falls to us, I don't think he will, would be Dante Fowler. I think we would have to go grab him. But otherwise, I think most of the value at our spot falls in the offense. If, you know, fingers crossed, I don't think they'll fall to us. But if, you know, Cooper or White fall to us, I think the Giants will hop on him right away, on them right away. But otherwise, I think Sheriff would be the good pick.
All right. Thank you, Mo. And I agree. Fowler would be the 1-4-3 guy in that top eight. That would be interesting. And I thought the one thing that was interesting, and we should have followed up with more with Matt, I guess, more on that. I said, yeah, that's one follow-up. But he has Bud Dupree going in the eight. And he's a guy that played defensive end at Kentucky. We had our guy on from Kentucky just last week, I think
Kyle,
it was, or earlier this week. And he gave us the lowdown on Bud Dupree. I think he can be a 4-3 defensive end in the league. So if Matt thinks, and we'll see if the NFL teams think likewise, that he's a top 10 viable pick, maybe that's somebody the Giants would consider at number 9 as well if he can fit in at that 4-3 defensive end spot. Jerry Reese loves his pass rushers.
Can't have enough of those pass rushers, as we saw last year. Also, you need to protect yourself via the injury bug. Kyle Tucker, we add on, who you're referring to, John, from the Courier-Journal in Lexington.
Good memory.
Well, it's also up here in front.
Oh, yeah.
I can't necessarily brag about that. But he, one of the things that we had asked him about was, you know, how is Bud Dupree against the run?
Yeah.
Because, you know, whenever you draft a pass rusher, you want to make sure that he can stop the run. Case in point, Justin Tuck, who I think to this day still doesn't get enough credit for his ability to stop the run, and JPP. A lot of people, when they evaluate JPP, John, they all get caught up in sack, sack, sack. Well, what about the plays where he's got to get in there and he's got to stop the run? And, you know, Kyle, when we had him on, mentioned that's the one area that he's constantly improving on, and I think that's probably the one area that a lot of these scouts are focusing on, John, because, you know, at the end of the day, what separates good pass rushers from one another? To me, it's their ability to stop the run.
Being a two-way player.
There you go. So if they're seeing that, then I can understand why he's all of a sudden moving up these draft boards.
201-939-4513. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Joseph, what's up, pal?
Hi, guys. Great show as usual.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Did I understand him saying that he thought that the tackles like Collins and Pete and that they should be down in the late teens to early 20s?
Yes.
Yeah, well, now does that mean now if you get calls for, say, these defensive linemen or cornerbacks or receivers that you could move down further than what Paul's saying from only 3 or 4 spots that maybe you can go to the teens or 20 now?
Well, again, Joe, that's how Matt Miller from Bleacher Report has the guys ranked. We don't know how it's going to go on draft day. And let me say this, too. You know, it depends how you feel about these tackles. You know, there's no guarantee the Giants – you know, think all these tackles are actually in that same neighborhood. Maybe they think, you know, DJ Humphreys is much better than Andrews Pete. Maybe they think Andrews Pete is much better than Lael Collins. I don't know how the Giants view those guys.
I understand that. What do you think the Giants need more of, a guard or a tackle?
That's the beauty of it, Joe. With Justin Pugh and his ability, or people's belief in his ability, and Jerry Reese quoted it as a possibility, something they'll consider to move inside. That's the beauty of this, and that's why Lance and I tried to mention this a lot. You pick the best offensive lineman you can get your hands on. I don't give a you-know-what where the guy plays, because the way the Giants are structured right now with the talent they have in the offensive line, you can fit him in pretty much anywhere besides center and left tackle. And you know what? That's the one place you don't need to put him. So they're really in a good spot.
See, Joe, you can't look at it. We'll let you continue, Joe. You can't look at it as if it's a jigsaw puzzle here and there's one opening on the offensive line for the Giants. I think, as John just touched on, you bring in the most talented, the most versatile offensive lineman, and you find a spot for him. And I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm going to continue to refer back to Zach Martin last year. You know, Martin, who played tackle at Notre Dame, if the Cowboys looked at their current roster, they weren't in dire need of an offensive lineman, but he was a top first-round pick. He was versatile. They found the spot for him, and they put him into the O-line. There's no reason why the Giants can't do the same.
And, Joe, even better example from the Giants, go back to when David Deal was in his prime. That was a guy who, depending on other guys being hurt and, you know, other guys coming in and out, you could put him at left tackle, left guard, or right guard. He'd be a better-than-average starter at all those spots. I could honestly see, Brandon Scherff being that type of player with maybe even a little bit more skill than Deal had when he was coming out of college. Deal was a fifth-round pick. Scherff is going to be number one pick, but I think he can have that level of versatility for whatever team he winds up on in the NFL.
Well, it sounds like you are with Paul in on Scherff, but now let me just ask you, do you think that a corner is more of a need or more of a value? It sounds like the Giants are going to have their pick of either or now, and he just added another guy to the mix that he put ahead of that first corner there, you know, your guest.
Yeah, Trey Waynes. And I think he put Marcus Peters there
simply based on talent.
And I don't disagree with that. I think Marcus Peters as a raw athlete and a cover corner as a player probably is pretty close to Trey Waynes. The problem is that Marcus Peters, as Matt mentioned, got thrown off his college football team. He had a tantrum on the field. He clashed with his coaches, showed up late for meetings, late for practice, and he got tossed off the team. So to me, those issues make him a little too dangerous for me to pick at number nine. So for me personally, he's not an option there. In terms of qualities of players, Joe, and I've said this before, I have Waynes and Scherff right here. They're on the same exact level.
It just seems like the Giants' phone's going to be ringing. There's going to be all the defensive tackles. There are going to be corners. There's going to be receivers. You know, that these teams, you know, everybody has different values or have them close and needs that want to come up for that. And the Giants' phone's got to be ringing off the wall. I said the first and the second round with these players, like in the second round, the running backs and that. And I just want to add, yet before I go, that safety-wise, the Eagles are in the same place as the Giants, and that they don't have no starting safety. And, well, maybe they'll grab that Collins at 20, I guess.
Yeah, they could.
That's about all.
Well, they need another safety, Joe. They do have one, and appreciate the phone call, Joe. They have Malcolm Jenkins.
Right.
He's still under contract. He's one of their two. Nate Allen they lost via free agency, so they need to replace
him. They tried to get Devin McCourty.
Correct.
That didn't work out. And by the way, it's not like the Cowboys are running out a couple of Pro Bowls at safety either.
Yeah.
I mean, J.J. Wilcox is a project third-round pick who some believe that the Cowboys are still trying to replace. Then you have Barry Church, who's more of that strong safety type. He was a decent player, but he's nothing spectacular. So, you know, safety's an issue in the NFC.
Redskins have some issues, too, at safety.
That's an excellent point.
Let's not forget about that.
Did they let Brandon Merriweather left, right?
Merriweather, so he's gone. He was banged up. They did make some moves at free agency. They obviously got Deshaun Goldson, and they brought in Jaron Johnson, the Seahawks backup safety.
Right.
So they addressed it. But remember, some of these players, such as Johnson, don't have a great deal of starting experience
right.
in the NFL. So I agree with Joe. I think he hit on a good point. You look at the Giants, they only have two safeties on the roster, but at the same time, it's not as if the Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Redskins are running away with things at that position. They also have areas that they need to address, which is centered around that safety spot.
And I just want to bring up something else that Joe mentioned real quick, and we'll get back to your calls in literally a second. But I'm not telling anybody right now, and I'm not sold that Brandon Scherff's my pick at number nine. The reason that he gets brought up a lot, because a lot of people downgrade his value or try to downgrade his value, in my opinion. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I think, based on where the Giants are, he's in the mix value-wise. I think that Devontae Parker is probably close to being in the mix value-wise. I think Trey Waynes is in the mix value-wise. If either one of those top two wide receivers drops to the Giants at nine, which I think at this point is very unlikely, they would certainly be in consideration when the Giants picking it. This is all my opinion. I don't know what Jerry Reese and the Giants scouting department thinks about these guys. But those are all guys, in my opinion, in the work that I've done, that I think guys would be in the mix at that spot. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and this relates to what Joe just asked. You know, Joe was talking about, I'm sure the phone is going to be off the hook for the Giants. You just named a few players that are going to be available at number nine. So if you want to say, well, if the Giants need an offensive line, Scherff's off the board, maybe they should consider moving down. Or maybe they should consider grabbing another game changer at another position, given there's going to be some options at number nine. And that's not a bad spot to be in. Just because you may think offensive line is a major need, and the one guy who could make more of an impact than the others is off the board, doesn't mean then you all of a sudden hit the panic button and say, give us the best offer. You look at corner, you look at some other positions, defensive tackle, there's going to be other playmakers right there at number nine.
Hell, and again, there's a great chance that Scherff's not even there at nine, too. So don't get locked into any one player, folks. I'm trying to really stress that here because you never know who's going to be there. No one for a month before the draft until a couple days before even mentioned Odell Beckham Jr.'s name on the show. Then all of a sudden he was a pick and everybody was thrilled. So let's not lock into any individual players here and decide, well, if we don't draft this guy, it's a disaster. Don't think that way, because there's a lot of excellent players, and whoever's there at nine is going to be a good one. So let's just see who's going to be there, and that's going to be a real little trick. Let's go to Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, what's up, pal?
Great segues. Great segue. I can dig everything y'all said, and this is what I've been saying for months. Don't get locked into one player. Like, that's why I keep going at P. Dot. It's because I feel like he's just locked in on Scherf, and it's either Scherf or bust. And it's not that way. It's not. You can still get an offensive lineman. Yes, the offensive lineman is important. We do need it. We need that fifth starter, and we need depth behind it, because I don't trust Newhouse.
Well, Shakes, do me a favor. If you have time, watch the last 10 minutes of yesterday's show. I threw out a scenario to Paul where Scherf was off the board and Trey Waynes was off the board, and his face went pale when he went into a panic. He didn't know what to do.
I seen it, and that's what I'm saying. I feel like he's locked in the Scherf, man. He got to get out of that, man. He got to get out of that. But great interview earlier. I love what the guy said about the running backs. That's another thing I've been saying for months now, is that even with the signing of a ring, I'm like, I'm like, ooh, that's why I don't like it, because I'm like, maybe that causes not to draft a running back in this draft. And in this draft, you can get a great running back. This is a draft to get a great running back, and then you go out and sign Vereen? Come on, man.
Well, Shakes, remember this, though. The running back you pick in the draft is not necessarily going to mimic Vereen's skills. Look, Rashad Jennings was only signed to a three-year contract, okay?
Yes.
If you get to the fifth round or even the fourth round and you look at your board and you say, you know what? The best player on our board, we got a running back with a second-round grade on him. We're in the fourth round. And the next best player, you know, we have like 150 on our board, which is like a fourth-round pick, or 120 on our board, which is a fourth-round pick. Yeah, you know what? I don't care that you have three running backs. You pick the running back in that spot if you think he's going to be the best player.
I hope so. I hope you're right, John. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that we get one of these running backs in this draft. Just, I don't care if it's in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, just get one of these running backs, because they are good. Man, I evaluated all of these guys, and they are very, very good.
Well, Shakes, that's exactly what Matt Miller said. You know, I asked him, I said, what's the deepest position this year? Last year was wide receiver. He said running back. He said you could get a guy like you just described in the fifth round. So I'm sure if there's a player out there that is high on the Giants draft board and they get to round five and they say to themselves, we can't pass up on this player, I don't see why the Giants wouldn't necessarily pull the trigger. They got Andre Williams, who was a Heisman Trophy candidate, in the fourth round last year. You can never have enough at every position, Shakes, and I think that was well documented last year, unfortunately, when the Giants dealt with numerous injuries.
I hope so. I got one more thing for y'all, though. My linebackers. Now, I like what y'all said earlier as well. We got some issues at linebacker, and I love the additions of Casillas and JT Thomas. They're fine for depth and special teams, because I love their speed, but I still feel like we need more linebackers. We need dominant linebackers. And in this draft, the middle linebackers in this draft all can stuff the run. They can all get downhill. So I think we got to capitalize on and grab them in either the second or third round. We got to value these linebackers high. And that's what I'm hoping. Like my boy J-Rock on the show yesterday, like, we don't value linebackers. I want him to take a linebacker in the second round, too, but that we don't value it. And that's sad that we got that mentality that the Giants won't even consider these guys.
No, but Shakes, I don't think that's the case. I don't think the Giants aren't considering them. I mean, I think if they get to that point, and that's why I asked the question to Matt about the middle linebackers in the second and third round of the draft, that when you get to that spot, you know, do you see guys that are going to go off the board in those areas? And he said, yeah. So, you know, I think if the Giants get to those spots and they see a linebacker and they're drawn and they say, you know what, this guy's pretty darn good, I think they are going to take him. I don't think that just because they haven't drafted a bunch of them that position's off their radar. It's not. If they think a player's good enough to be picked, I think they will go out and I think they will pick him, especially considering John Beeson's injury history.
Yeah, they better not.
Thank you, Shakes.
You know me. I'm going to be mad, man.
Shakes, you're going to be mad regardless of what happens. Let's be honest here.
No. If they make the right moves, I'm happy. But come on, man. You got to make the right moves, man. And the linebacker is important, especially on this team. We lacking it.
All right, Shakes.
I think Perriman fits the mold. That's the last thing I'm going to say. Perriman fits the mold of our linebackers. If you go back and look at Beeson and Jonathan Goff and all those guys, retirement fist the most. Hey. Thanks for taking my call, fellas.
You thanks, got Jake. Shakes. Look, if you appreciate want that physical thumper on first and second down to stop the run, Perryman's your guy out of the script, in my opinion. He really is. 201-939-4513. Three callers. We'll go a little bit past one here. Let's go to Joe in Long Island first. He's a first-time caller. Joe, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, John? Hey, Lance.
Doing well, Joe. How are you, pal?
How are you? I'm calling. I'm excited. I mean, but unfortunately, I'm one of those guys that are hoping to get the Senate, the offensive lineman sheriff. I'm like, Paul Dottino has me brainwashed, but
I'm sorry about that.
I really can picture him as a beast on the line, and then watching this three-headed monster running team we have now, I'm excited about it, and I hope we do get him.
Hey, you know what? Just all I'm going to say, Joe, you can hope for him, you could be a fan of him, you can want him to be the guy, but just remember there is a chance he's not going to be there. So if you have some time over the next 2 weeks, here's what I want you to do. I want you to hit the internet. I want you to hit the books. I want you to have the grinds turn a little bit in the head. I want you to come up with your plan B. And when you figure out what your plan B is, I want you to call us back. I want you to tell us what your plan B is, and I want you to make your case for it, all right?
Well, I know you saw that to Paul Dottino, and you definitely stunned him, and you stunned me yesterday with that question. But I think we definitely need an offensive lineman in the first round. I want that well-rounded, balanced Giants football team again. We had an explosive passing game last year. We were in the top 10. And I think if we round it off and get that running attack and that balance we need, we could get back to Super Bowl form. And I think it's very important to get that offensive line intact.
Well, I would agree with you, Joe. The years where the Giants went on those Super Bowl runs, the running game may have not been present consistently throughout the season, but once the postseason came along, things all of a sudden triggered. So it's a necessity for this team. The last few years, unfortunately, it's been very up and down. Part of it's been because of injuries to the backfield and the offensive line, but, you know, balance is something that the Giants have prided themselves on, and if they could get back to that, this makes that offense that much more dangerous.
And that's what I'm hoping for. I know what you're saying. There could be so many different variables, but I look forward to that. If they could balance out this running attack and get back to power football, I mean, there's no telling what we could do on offense next year. I know we need a lot of work on the defense. Not a lot of work, but we got to fill some holes. You know, losing Entrell Roll is I was kind of devastated when they didn't re-sign him, but I know that we're gonna work it out and get somebody in there to help, but it's gonna be a process, that part, especially with the new Spags defense. A lot of people have to learn. It's gonna be like learning a new offense from last year, but they seem to overcome it and do well.
Well, and keep in mind, remember, nobody who played under Spags the first time around, Joe, is currently on the team. So it's not as if you could turn to a player
Kiwanuka.
Once they got Riddick. Kiwi was cut. So he was
right.
The last tie into
last
Spags.
One.
Yeah. It's all right. You're in the draft mode. Listen, between Joe, Joe's been brainwashed by Dottino. You're in another world. I don't know who I'm sitting next to now. So. All right, Joe.
Well, Dottino just makes a lot of sense when he talks about that power run.
Well,
I mean,
Joe, listen.
I really miss that.
Joe, I'm glad that at least somebody out there believes that he makes a lot of sense, because now I can sleep well at night knowing that.
I am Italian. Maybe I'm favoring him.
Hey,
whatever. I got to say, though, he really got me pumped up for Sheriff. He really did. And not only him, but John as well. I know John wants him. He won't admit it, but I know John wants him as well.
He does jumping jacks in the background when we're off the air, so I can confirm that.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, Joe.
So
appreciate the phone call.
Hey,
you got it.
Don't be a stranger, my friend. Thanks for calling and being part of the show. I'm not saying, folks, I'm telling you. I will tell you when I'm there who my big board is and where it's going to be. I'm not there yet. I'll let you know. If you remember last year, I did the same thing, and then one of the names I gave you in my mix, and I'm not going to give you the pick because I'm an employee of the team. I'm not giving a pick for the Giants because it's not my job to make the pick for the Giants, but I'm going to give you the guys in the mix. And I was lucky enough, and that's all it was, to have Beckham in the mix last year, lucky enough, and hopefully I'll be able to give you something similar this year. We'll see.
Have you polished the crystal ball?
No, I have not.
No, you have not polished
crystal
it.
Ball's still hiding. It hasn't even
come
out yet.
I just wanted to make
way
sure.
Way too early.
There's
still
a process. Yes, we got a few more weeks. So.
Until the guys are up there and the scouts are here, putting the magnets on the board in that draft room, I'm not going to come down and tell anybody anything.
Well, I just want you to set the scene for the viewers and the listeners out there so they don't get too antsy. You at least understand that it's a patient process.
Yes.
And you're not necessarily as far along as they may have hoped.
It's more Magic 8-Ball than it is
Magic 8-Ball.
Crystal
Ball. Okay, so
yes.
It's one of those little shake there. Like a little
it's a very
shakes
precise
from Maryland
system.
Type of thing?
It's a very precise
system.
Okay,
very system. Precise. Wonderful.
Yes.
Boy.
I've tried to use it. It keeps says ask me later, so I haven't been able to make my picks yet.
You're working out the kinks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's understandable.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and go to Russell in Texas. Russ, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? It's Russell for Knoxville in Texas, the Atlanta, the Cowboys. You don't know how everywhere I go it makes me sick. Oh, my.
Good to hear from you, Russ. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, what's up? Now, I got to back up P-Dot because I'm with the offensive line too. But I even told him, if Sheriff's not there, I don't think the Giants are going to draft Sheriff, though. Something's telling me they're looking at Flowers and Collins. I'm telling you, this kid from LSU, I think it's going to be a lot better. I just got a crazy feeling. I hear y'all saying defense. I hear y'all saying wide receiver. I just need the Giants need offensive line. We need to run the ball. We got three running backs. Wide receiver, I don't think they're going to do that. You still got Victor Cruz under contract, and you just signed Harris for $17 million. I'm thinking about money-wise. Yeah, I know under rookie contract, but still, I still see offensive line.
Well, Russ, I'll say this. I would understand if they, let's say Sheriff's there and they took Eric Flowers, because I understand the thinking there. They think Flowers has a bigger, he's a higher ceiling, he's a better athlete, he's a better physical specimen. I would understand why they would make that decision. To me, Collins and Sheriff are similar players in terms of their athleticism, in terms of their ability, but I think Sheriff's a lot more polished. So I wouldn't understand them necessarily taking Collins over Sheriff. I would understand the thought process if they took a guy like Flowers over Sheriff because they're very different types of players. To me, Sheriff is much more of a really high floor, lower ceiling, while Flowers is more of a lower floor but a much higher ceiling. And they're two very different players that way.
Yeah, I have a feeling the Giants look. That's why when I've been looking online, I Google, and they were like looking at offensive line. They looked at the kid from LSU, and they just said Flowers. I have a feeling they're gonna draft one of those two. It has to happen. I'm sorry. We need an offensive line. You cannot trust this offensive line next year. Protect Eli Manning, contract extension. You cannot trust this offensive line. I'm sorry. You just can't.
Well, Russ, in fairness, and I'm not saying that offensive line is not an area where the Giants certainly would want to add depth, but, you know, when people start saying that they didn't do a good job protecting Eli Manning, the numbers did improve, in fairness, from 2013 to 2014. As a few other callers hit on, I think the run – getting the run going is an area that you'd like to see take another significant step forward this past season. But there was improvement in pass protection. Now, part of that was the Giants got rid of the ball very quickly this season. So the offensive line didn't necessarily have to give Eli Manning as much time as maybe in the past because this is how the offense is structured. But, you know, when I look at perhaps if you want to go in the direction of offensive line, you want to get a guy, John, who you know is also going to maybe take the running game to a next step. And, you know, the reason why we're focusing run on Brandon Sheriff, and from the interviews we've done, everybody raves about his ability to push the pile forward and open up holes.
And everyone has him as their – I haven't found one draft person yet, not one, that doesn't have him rated as their best lineman on the board. Not one.
If the Giants don't get him, I still say go offensive line. I'm sorry. They need that. You got to protect Eli. That's the whole thing about our franchise quarterback. You got to protect your franchise quarterback. You got to get him. You can't play a rap. Eli gets hurt, we're done.
Thank you, Russ.
All right, Russ. Appreciate the phone call. I just want to bring up as an example, there have been a number of quarterbacks over the last few years, just the last 2 years, who, you know, have won Super Bowls or have good resumes. And unfortunately, because of the offensive line, whether it be pass protection or the running game, you've seen the offenses, you know, take a step back. It's not something that, you know, the Giants are the only team in this league trying to deal with. The Baltimore Ravens, if you recall, Joe Flacco. 2 years ago, they struggled to run the football and they struggled in pass protection. The Miami Dolphins also looked to shore up both of those issues over the last few seasons because Ryan Tannehill, in terms of keeping him upright and also getting the running game going. The offensive line is probably the one area in football. It's not a sexy position. It's not a name position, but it's such an integral position because everything on offense feeds off of that. And I know I'm talking generics here, but the point I'm making is you could look at the Giants situation, John, and then I could give you a number of other examples in the NFL who have dealt with similar types of issues.
I'll tell you one right now. Last year, your Super Bowl champion New England Patriots, they traded the offensive lineman in the offseason, and the first four games, they struggled. They went just 2-2 of those first four games.
Logan Mankins you're referring to.
Logan Mankins, yeah. Thank you. I didn't remember the name.
That's why I'm here.
No, I appreciate it.
No problem.
First game of the year, Tom Brady sacked four times, threw for 249 yards, just one touchdown, completed just 52% of his passes. Game two, threw for only 149 yards on 21 attempts, one touchdown, one sack. Week three, 230 yards, one touchdown, two sacks. Week four, and that was against the Raiders, by the way, one of the worst defenses in football. And then week four against the Chiefs, he had one touchdown, two interceptions, sacked twice, threw for just 159 yards. Those are four very un-Tom Brady-like games. Do you know why he had four very un-Tom Brady-like games? Because the offensive line struggled. They figured things out. They moved guys around. I think they made a trade even to bring in an offensive lineman at some point during the year. They made some kind of trade.
I think around the trade deadline. Wasn't that the trade involving Casillas?
I think it might have been, yeah.
Let me confirm. I'm not sure who they got in return.
The bottom line is that the Patriots fixed their offensive line issues, then all of a sudden Tom Brady's year took off as the offensive line got better. When Tim Wright, the tight end they got from Tampa Bay, yeah. I thought they made another minor deal for an offensive lineman. I could be wrong. However they filled the spot, they figured it out, and they played better. And that's when Tom Brady's season turned around. So it's a perfect example just last year. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Our final call of the show is Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeffrey, how are you, sir?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Good. I'm fine, thanks. I guess we all understand that the successful running game is a quarterback's best friend. I guess, next week the OTA start. I know there won't be a whole lot going on with that. I assume that you'll be doing some kind of type of reporting on that during the week.
Yep, players arrive for the first time on Monday. We'll cover it. We'll video, and we'll talk about it next week. Though I'm sure a lot of the focus will still be on the draft. And by the way, Jeff, next week we expect to get the schedule to come out from the league office as well. When next week is anyone's guess, but it is supposed to come out next week as well. So we can find out when we have to go to Buffalo and Minnesota, hopefully not December.
Yeah. another thing, this kid Shaq Thompson is. I'm starting to think he could be an intriguing player for the Giants. What do you guys think about him? And you think the Giants might have some interest in him?
Well, when it comes to a player like that, I think a lot of people are still trying to determine what fit he would be for an
exactly
NFL
what
team.
He is. Yeah.
Exactly, in terms of his versatility, which is an upside, don't get me wrong, but if you're going to bring a player like that in, Jeff, I think you need to determine, okay, where are we going to put him, number one, and then what does he do that works well within our system? So once you answer both of those questions, then you have a little bit more clarity in terms of what you can do with somebody like that. But I think the main conversation surrounding Shaq is, what do we do with him? You know, where is his ideal fit as he moves from college to the NFL? And sometimes those, you know, tweener players who people like to refer to, it really comes down to the system and what a guy like, you know, Spags could do potentially with somebody like that and how they could envision utilizing someone like that.
Yeah. I don't especially like the Giants going after these tweener types because we've never been really successful with those type of players. But I'm just wondering, do you think he's fast enough to play safety? He seems to have the build of a good-sized safety, not linebacker, but safety, I think.
I think he can play both positions, to answer your question. And I think that given time and
not
obviously,
a covered safety now. Not a covered safety.
No, but I think he's a hard enough hitter and a guy that can roam free where as long as he's staying within the details of the system, I think he could flourish at either position. But then again, it goes back to my premise about what is your system? How do you utilize your safety? Yeah. How do you utilize your linebacker? I think he's got the intangibles, Jeff, but once again, tell me about your system, how you're going to put him in there, and then I think there's more clarification.
And, Jeff, I don't want to get Giant fans too excited now, but I think it was an insider article on ESPN. For those folks that don't have a subscription, Mel Kiper did his best possible A draft for each team where he basically did the first three rounds of the draft and set it up where he thought each team would have the best draft possible where they picked, and he actually had Shaq Thompson dropping all the way to the Giants in round number three.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I know he's
that'd be great
pretty
value
high in
round three.
Was that safety from Utah? I don't recall.
Rowe,
Rowe.
Rowe.
Yeah.
He actually is a corner. He's a corner that people think could play safety.
Yeah. Okay, guys. I'll talk to you next week, and I look forward to your reporting on the OTA. So have a good day.
Yeah. You as well, Jeff.
And we are looking
appreciate
forward to getting the guys back in the building.
Yeah.
And get more energy. And
absolutely.
Starts feeling like the real thing again. Paul Dottino's, I think, working out right now, getting ready to do the speed walk from one end of the locker room to the other. He's psyched.
He's got to refamiliarize himself with the setup. But it will be nice next week to, you know, get back into the flow of the guys that are currently on the roster instead of speculating who may be joining the roster, to get a feel for some of the players and a lot of new faces, their first time interacting with one another as well as the media. So certainly an exciting time when OTAs get going.
A couple off-the-beaten-path things I want to address with you real quick before you say goodbye. Nothing to do with
off the
football,
beaten
so
path.
If you want
wow.
a guy, turn
oh,
this off, go ahead, it's fine.
Oh, I have a feeling I know where this is going,
well,
but anyway.
You haven't told me yet. Lance decided to join our Rec League Basketball League, and he played last night. I had to work a women's event here at the facility, so I wasn't there. What happened in the game? I don't even know what happened.
You didn't speak to the family?
I have an email pending to my brother.
See, I thought you would have gotten the
I got nothing.
411 from Pete.
What happened?
I'm surprised that I'm the first one. Well, we didn't win.
Ah.
But part of it was, and now it's going to sound like I'm giving a whole laundry list of excuses, they had about 10 guys and we had 6.
They had
so
10 guys, huh?
Depth was a big disparity in yesterday's game. I also will admit that I was a little bit rusty. It was my first time in terms of a competitive basketball game in quite some time. Not that I haven't been working out and
wow.
in shape, but
yeah,
you had to get back into the flow of the game. So I would rate my defense was at a good level. Offense, we need to work on some things in terms of getting into the
wow.
flow of the shot.
That might be the most critical I've ever heard Lance be
I was not very pleased with my performance, but the good news is it's only game one. So I think that we certainly have room
for improvement. What was the final score?
I think we lost by about 20, I think
was
the final score.
Oh, it was a blowout?
Yeah. It was a blowout.
See what happens
yes.
when I don't show up to these games?
Well, once again, it was because of the fact that a lot of us were gassed at the end of the game, and, you know, we tried to rotate
it out. Was it close
it
at
out.
Halftime?
Oh, it was a close game at halftime, yeah. The second half was when things started to blow open.
It.
They hit a few threes. It wasn't as if it was a layup drill. It was just a number of contested threes,
okay.
and you tip your cap to the opposition, and that's the game of basketball.
And we will one touch base again before it happens, but right now, where do the Knicks pick in the NBA draft when the lottery happens on May 18th?
They're not going to get the number one overall pick. I'm going to be on the record saying that. I think they're going to get the fourth overall pick.
Four?
That's where I'm going to go.
Actually, by the odds, that's actually the most likely spot.
There you go. So, see, I have something to back myself up.
Man.
And remember, I'm going to
go
here on the record again, and I've tried to convince the man here to my left 100 million times. If you go based on history, and I know we're getting off topic here, but I'm sure there's a number of basketball fans, lottery went in force in 1985.
The team with the worst record never wins. I know.
Well, no, it's not that they never win.
Rarely.
But four times the team with the worst record got the number one overall pick since 1985.
Right. Even now. It's early, and I'll let you reconsider once everything goes down.
Oh, there's more material. Wow. I'm surprised. I thought we covered everything at this point.
Who would be the pick at four?
Who would be the pick at four? Well, Okafor and Towns are off the board.
You would assume.
You want to say D'Angelo Russell's off the board,
well,
too?
Do you think
Emmanuel Mudiay's off the board?
That's part of my question.
Remember,
for you. Mudiay, who do you think is going to be there?
Mudiay played overseas.
I don't need your full analysis. Just
well,
I'm
going to
get.
No, see, you just want me to throw out a name.
Yeah,
there's got to be
do.
Some rationale behind what I say. I don't just throw stuff out on the wall
you
to
don't?
See if it sticks. My thing with Mudiay is Mudiay, you know, is overseas, and I think there's going to be a number of people that are concerned, just like Brandon Jennings, who did go in round one, but he went further down. So I'm going to eliminate Mudiay. Therefore, I'll say Russell and Winslow
okay.
are the two guys who could be flip-flopped at 3 and 4.
I think when all is said and done, I think Mudiay might even go ahead of Okafor.
Really?
I'm getting that sense.
That much upside.
I'm getting the sense. That's what I'm getting. I think Okafor scares some people. Not me. I would
Why?
Pick him
defensively?
Second.
Is that the concern? I think
and athleticism.
Too much is made of what Kaminsky did to him.
I agree.
In the championship.
He did the
game.
Same thing to Karl Towns.
He did it to everybody.
He did it to everybody.
Kaminsky's a versatile guy. Here's the question. How many times is Okafor going to be asked to go out on the three-point line and defend a seven-footer who can take you off the dribble?
Rarely, if ever.
There you go. So you can't get caught up in one game
it's
when you break down a player.
It's that you're worried about. Shot blocking, rim protection, things like that.
Okay. Right. Listen,
all right, so you're going Winslow
I'll put
Russell
substance in that. Winslow and Russell
right.
is where I'm looking at 3 and 4.
I would be okay with that.
If the Knicks got Justice Winslow, I think that'd be a phenomenal pick.
I think he's a good player.
I think that is a kid that's got a lot of upside. I followed him since he was in high school. I think he's got a tremendous amount of upside, versatility, and he's come a long way in 1 year. Remember,
he improved
the things
a lot.
He did in the NCAA tournament, he was not doing with Duke earlier in the season.
I think it's about a 5-player deep draft, so I think even Knicks go as far as 5, which is the farthest they can drop, I still think they'll get a pretty good player. So I think they're actually
in a
pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think there's 5 quality players you'd be content with walking away.
All right, folks, we got 8.
And if they get Brandon Sheriff, it may not be a bad thing either.
We had he plays center, right?
There
we
you
got,
go.
We got 9 shows before the NFL draft. We'll have either guys from schools or draft experts on every single show as we get ready to see who the Giants are going to pick number 9 overall. A bunch of other great content coming your way on Giants.com. We're going to break down Michael Eisen and Paul Tino, go through how they ranked the top value draft picks the Giants have had in their history. They go all the way back to the 50s with this.
Tino must be loving that.
You have no idea. So they go through who they think the 10 best value picks are. That's number one. We're going to have our mock drafts. Paul Dottino, Bob Papa, Amani Toomer, and David Deal all did mock drafts, so they'll come on the website. We'll continue with our draft player profiles, guys position by position, and I think those are the highlights moving forward here. And obviously we'll have more coverage, our mock draft tracker. Make sure you check that out as we see what people are predicting the Giants are going to do. And, of course, next week the players return for the offseason conditioning program. We'll have coverage of that on Giants.com as well as the schedule release, which should happen sometime next week as well. Lance, enjoy your weekend. It should be a beautiful one. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
What a get-go punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!